Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
All right. You know, I it's Thursday. I'm actually to the point of the week where I don't care, but I'm going with the fact that it's Thursday. This is definitely Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need? Well, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. And, you know, as you know, the blogs go up there Thursday and Saturday. So you can swing on by and take a look at the blog that popped up over there yesterday. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and click that link. Get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, well, hey, that would be greatly, you know, greatly awesome. I don't even know if that's a quality phrase. Don't forget, we also have a Twitter feed, which is Radio. Now, you can also find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time. Dan the Man is at
Dan Z Man. Three E's.
All right, Dan. You got to, I don't know what you got to do, but you got to help me out here one way or the other. I am completely sick and tired of listening to these ridiculous, whiny, overpaid NFL quarterbacks when they can't get their frickin' way, so they automatically want off the team. And the stupidity behind these guys, because they're only looking out for themselves and they don't understand how the salary cap works and what a hit the team would have to take if they traded them, just drives me nuts. You know, like today, Russell Wilson came out and said, now he didn't demand a trade to the Seahawks, but he's open to going to the Dallas Cowboys, New Orleans Saints, Las Vegas Raiders, or the Chicago Bears. Dan, if the Seahawks were to trade Russell Wilson, they would have to take a $39 million cap hit for next year. All right, what team in their right mind would do that unless you're getting six number one draft picks for Russell Wilson? So what I need him to do is I need him to shut the hell up, deal with his singer wife and the couple kids they have, all right, and understand basic common sense economics. I'm not asking him to go in and learn the entire structure of an NFL salary cap, but I want him to get his head out of his ass and stop whining about, well, you know, I play for a defensive coach, and I want to throw the football more, and all we do is run. They allowed you to throw the football more last year, Russell. Where the hell did your team end up? I think you got beat by an underdog in the first round of the playoffs. So do me a favor and please shut up and take Deshaun Watson with you. Yeah, you know, because, Dan, I'm to the point where I don't want to watch the freaking NFL when it comes around anymore. I'm just done.
Well, like you said, you're not asking him or any other NFL quarterback to completely understand the structure of the salary cap and every single piece of information that's in the collective bargaining agreement. I mean, that's why they have lawyers and all that good stuff. But when your profession is the NFL, shouldn't you have that basic understanding of how your decisions, you know, like you said, affect not only him, but the team as a whole?
Like I said, I think it more boils down to the fact that he doesn't care about the team. He's just looking out for himself.
That's it really comes down to,
and, you know, just let him go. Okay, well, you know, I don't care about them. I just want to get what I want. And, you know, as long as I get that, then everything is just fine.
Is it possible?
It's an NBA.
Well, and is it possible for the Seahawks to restructure his contract so that they could make a move and not?
Yeah, but he would probably have to take a little less money, and you know he's not going to do that. So, you know, it's just the way it kind of is. And, you know, the weird thing is this is a quarterback on a winning team listening to why now. You know, like, obviously, you know, Carson Wentz was on a bad team. The Eagles stunk last year. So did he. Well, he wanted to get off the team. Deshaun Watson is on a bad team. The Houston Texans stunk. He had a really good year. So he wants to leverage that into getting off the team. The Seahawks were a playoff team and would have done much better had Russell Wilson performed against the Rams and produced for them. They could have went on.
Yeah. Now, and you know, I don't completely understand the whole Deshaun Watson thing, and an acquaintance from Facebook, you know, once said that the Bears didn't draft Deshaun Watson because they're racist, which, I mean, historically, we know how that goes with the quarterbacks in Chicago. I don't think that's the determining factor. I just think what's-his-name had his head up his ass and had too much of a, you know, I forget what that term is, but just sight, you know, his eyes, his target was locked on Mitch, and he didn't see anything else going on around him for some reason. But at the same token, if he didn't draft Deshaun Watson when they had the chance, is the GM the kind of guy who would step back and be like, well, since we didn't get him that first time, we should go after him now? You know, does that kind of play into it? You know, would the Bears want to make a deal like that to trade for Deshaun Watson after the fact that, you know, the guy in charge didn't draft him to begin with?
Well, just to address your first point there, oddly enough, for whatever reason, I can only get certain radio stations in my office overnight because of the building. So I've been listening to WSBR, and this morning, one of the hot topics was a lot of complaining about the fact that the Bears drafted Mitchell Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. What everybody seems to forget, because you don't ever want to ruin a good story with the facts. Remember that. I believe Dan has said that multiple times, and I think actually taught me that phrase. Coming out of college, Mitchell Trubisky was ranked higher and had better prospects as an NFL quarterback than either Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. All right, that's why the Bears drafted him. Now, obviously, all the scouting on that was completely incorrect, because out of the three, Trubisky has turned out to be the worst NFL quarterback. But all the Bears were doing was following the scouting directives, and even the big shots on the Mickey Mouse Network, the Mel Kiper Juniors and the Todd McShays, had Trubisky as the number one quarterback in that draft. So, yeah, it didn't work out, and now you look back and you go, oh, you know, Patrick Mahomes is the GOAT. Well, if Patrick Mahomes was a Bear, we wouldn't be playing in the Super Bowl. All right, it's, you know, and this is what, and all these idiots forget this, Dan, because all I see now when I read an NFL mock draft is how, well, all these teams are going to trade up to get quarterbacks. Well, that's great. They're going to give away all their draft capital. They're going to draft a quarterback. And then they're not going to have any pieces to put around that quarterback. And then when the quarterback doesn't perform, you're going to go on television or radio or your podcast and say, oh, well, that was a terrible draft pick. Look at, you know, look at how poorly he performed. And it was just really stupid of them to make that pick. You know, there's no reason that these teams need to be trading up for these guys like they're talking about. You know, last year, Tua Tagovailoa was the hot name, and it was like, oh, my God, where's he going? And he's going to be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. You know, he played a limited number of games for Miami last year because he had to recover from hip surgery first. And now there's guys who are convinced that Miami needs to trade him and draft somebody else and start over after they just started over last freaking year. So this is a kid to every baseball team having to trade their best player for prospects, Dan. It's just out of control. And the stupidity is ridiculous. So, you know, that obviously that was your first point. The second point is, you know, would the Bears trade for Deshaun Watson? You know, yeah, sure. I'm sure they probably would, but I don't think they have the assets that a Houston would be looking for. You know, again, unless they were willing to give up multiple draft picks. And they could somehow convince Houston to take the, I believe it's a $25 or $30 million cap hit that they would have to deal with for trading Deshaun Watson. So, you know, to get that deal done basically puts Houston in the bottom of their division for to come, with zero chance at contending until you can get out of the doldrums of the Watson contract. So I can completely understand why the Texans are saying we don't want to trade him and we want to keep him.
Yeah. I guess the one thing with Deshaun Watson's issue with Houston, not really knowing what the issue was for J.J. Watt, do you think that there's some kind of justification for why Deshaun was, you know, wanting to get out? You know, because it's kind of at first it seemed like you had said, you know, it's a lot of whiny quarterback used to getting his way. But then the guy who, when you thought of the Texans, or right, yeah, the Texans, you immediately thought of J.J. Watt. You didn't think of anybody else. And he wanted to get out of town?
Yeah, well, you know, the mistake the Texans made was they gave Bill O'Brien too much power. They made him head coach and general manager, and he made some really terrible moves that cost the team. You know, he realized they weren't going to be able to re-sign DeAndre Hopkins, so they traded him for David Johnson, who, after dealing with the injuries he has dealt with, was probably past his prime as an NFL running back. Not the best move there. He gave up a lot of draft capital to acquire Laremy Tunsil to help protect Deshaun Watson. So, again, you know, they were limited on what they could do and what they could draft. Well, when it came out and the team really stunk this year, they decided that they needed to part ways with Bill O'Brien, so they did. And then Deshaun Watson decided that he knew who they should hire, because obviously they not only needed a coach, but they needed a general manager. And he wanted to be involved in all these decisions. And the team didn't involve him. You know, he wanted Eric Bieniemy hired. You know, well, nobody else hired Eric Bieniemy, so you got to wonder what's going on there. But Houston did hire an African-American head coach, or black, as we can actually, I guess, say. They hired David Culley, who was the Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator. But apparently that wasn't good enough for Deshaun Watson, and they actually hired the general manager first. And he went on and made some really, not descriptive, but kind of underhanded tweets about what a terrible hire that was, even though I'm sure he didn't know the guy and had zero idea what the guy's resume was. If I remember correctly, the guy worked in the front office in New England and helped put together multiple championship teams there. But that wasn't good enough for Deshaun Watson because they didn't allow him to be involved in the process. So, again, it's a 25-year-old whiny quarterback who wanted his way because he thinks he's in the NBA and LeBron James is going to come to his defense. But, you know, you just add him to the Russell Wilson pile, get them to learn how to shut up and play, because for whatever reason, the Eagles decided to move Carson Wentz, even though it's going to handicap them in the salary cap for years to come. So, you know, I guess he expects that the Texans will do the same. You know, it was reported today that he finally decided to get together with the new head coach, another guy he didn't know and had no idea who he was, just didn't like the hire because it wasn't Eric Bieniemy and he wasn't involved in making it. And then he still came out and whined and said he still wanted to be traded. So what I'm hoping he does is he sits out and the Texans just refuse to pay him. And they let him sit out the remainder of his contract, even though I know no team has the balls to do that. Because he's got about 4 or 5 years on his contract, and by the time he would come back, he wouldn't be able to get diddly squat. You know, no team would want to pay him, no matter what team it was. But, again, like I said, teams don't have the balls to do that. They break down and they give these prima donnas what they want. And, you know, again, Dan, I'm just sick of it, and it makes me not want to watch the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, are you alluding to the fact that you don't think a guy who has not laced up and got, you know, laced up the boots or the cleats, got behind center and took a snap for 5 years would be, you know, would be really worthy. I don't want to say worthy, but deserving of a high profile contract. Or do you think that would be an opportunity to just go for workouts and hope that a team likes you? No one in particular.
Unfortunately, there would be teams out there that would be interested. But you're looking at a guy now. Deshaun Watson's contract for this coming season is just going to make $10.54 million. But he does have a signing bonus of $5.4 million. The contract after that jumps to $35 million. Then there's a decline to $20 million before it goes to $32 and $32 for the final 2 years. He also gets that signing bonus not only next year, but for each of the next 3 years after that. And the year he makes $20 million, he also gets a roster bonus of $17 million. So he would walk away from quite a bit of money. And, Dan, I just don't see him doing that. He can piss and moan all he wants, but when he comes down to it, he's not walking away from this money. He would have to a little over $11 million this year, but then it would be $40 million, $42 million, $37 million and $32 million. And I'm going to guess he's not going to do that.
He's not going to pull Le'Veon Bell?
No, you know, my guess is, like, he may sit out this year and try to get something done. But if the Texans are smart and just hold their ground, he's going to cave. The problem is, again, I don't think they have the balls to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, with Houston kind of being up, I don't know what the term would be, up in arms or going through a semi-rebuild or whatever's going on, if he sat out for a year, would that actually kind of help them out because, you know, it would boost their spot in the draft the following year?
Yeah, they may actually get the number one pick in the draft if they don't have Deshaun Watson. So, you know, and I mean, obviously that's going to depend on how some of the other bottom teams, you know, do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, he may actually be doing them a favor, you know, because I believe, you know, as of right now, I think the only other quarterback on their roster is A.J. McCarron. Obviously, they'll bring some other guys in. You know, if they were to trade Watson, they wouldn't be able to sign his replacement.
See, I guess that's the one thing I don't understand about the NFL is, I mean, I get it. You know, I guess you have to accept some kind of financial responsibility for the guy you signed if you try to sign him, you know, trade him away. But at the same time, it just kind of baffles me how, you know, you're still taking the hit even though the guy's traded. I guess I just don't understand that part of it.
Yeah, you know, I don't fully understand the salary cap itself. I think in a way it may have to do with situations like this, you know, where you get a player like Deshaun Watson who becomes unhappy and then starts to cry. In wrestling, we would call guys like this little bitches. You know, they start to cry. And, you know, so now what they've got to understand is when you take this long-term deal and this big money, you have to understand that you are going to be there. So Deshaun Watson took the money. Now he needs to be there. But instead, we're going to get to listen to him piss and moan until he gets what he wants, like every prima donna athlete does. He's not the only one who does this. We see this in the NBA almost every day. But yet when a team does it and they decide to sit like a DeAndre Jordan or a Blake Griffin, or excuse me, I think it's Andre Drummond and a Blake Griffin, it's the team that everybody goes after. Nobody's going after Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson. Everybody's backing them up thinking, oh, you're great. You're fighting against the machine. They're not fighting against the machine. Deshaun Watson is looking to go to a winner. And Houston was for a few years there. They were a playoff team. Last year they had a down year. They didn't do what he wanted. And now he's going to cry about it. That's the bottom line to the whole situation. It doesn't have anything else to do with anything. It's the fact that it looks like they're in a cycle where they're going to lose for a few years. And he wants off the bus, bottom line.
Yeah. Well, and even, you know, it's funny because, well, let me go back to your wrestling comment because I actually was going to go there. And, you know, it clearly reminded me of the indie scene where, you know, you book a guy to wrestle a match. And, you know, after the match, and you obviously would attest to this 100%. But, you know, I'm just like you would walk up to the guy and say, hey, great match. You know, do some other BS and then, you know, say some other stuff to him. And then I'm sure the next thing out of his mouth would be, yeah, you know, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. Next time, you know, I don't know if you had those conversations right away or if all that BS came through, you know, email and Facebook Messenger, but, you know, essentially telling you how to run the show that you're in charge of running. You know, how they're going to, not how you're going to fit them into your product, but how they want you to fit them into what you're doing. You know, so it just reminded me of that so much so. And, you know, one of the things that stands out to me for Russell Westbrook, and this is what makes no sense to me, well, and even Deshaun Watson, you know, for that matter, you know, you're just because you leave the team, I mean, look at Cam Newton. I think we all believed that Cam Newton was going to walk into Boston. I don't know about a Super Bowl, but I think we all believed that the Patriots were going to get that far because Belichick's done it for so long. And when Tom Brady got hurt, you know, he brought in Jimmy and then the other guy, and they were still able to succeed. And look at what happened. Nothing happened in New England this year. So I don't understand this whole thing where they think just because they're going to move somewhere that all of a sudden they're going to be a championship contending team. You know, the quarterback can completely change the entire dynamic. And, you know, one of the things that stands out to me for Russell Westbrook and eyeing Chicago for one of the things of all teams, you talked about how he didn't like getting hit all the time. Wasn't that one of the things you said?
Yeah.
So if you don't want to get hit all the time, why the hell would you want to come to Chicago? I mean, if we learned anything from the Jay Cutler era to now, is that you are lucky if you have more than 3 seconds after the snap. If you get 5 seconds, whoo! And the only one who got more time out of a snap would be Mitchell because he was the only one who would run out of the pocket. You know, not to say that he was the only one who could do it, but you know, that was part of his game. So I that's the one thing I don't understand. Like you said, Russell Wilson's in a good position. They've always had a contending team. You come to Chicago, yeah, you know what will happen? He could come to Chicago. They could tear it up for maybe a season if they're lucky. But look at what's happened. You know, everything was hot when Mitchell, you know, Mike Glennon was removed. Mitchell came in. We've got, you know, the former offensive line or the former offensive coordinator for the Chiefs who didn't call any plays. Head coaching, so we have an offensive team. It's not all going to be about defense. But then the only games that are – the games are really won by the defense. You know, so it's like I don't understand that. You know, if you're just sick of being in Seattle, just say it. I'm tired of being in Seattle. I want to move on.
Yeah, well, you know, basically the reason for Wilson's four picks are there are four teams that will allow him to throw the football like he wants to. And that's all it is. It's selfishness on his part, looking for, you know, that team, you know, because, I mean, obviously, seeing the New Orleans Saints play, you know, all they're going to do is throw the football. You know, John Gruden lets Derek throw the football. If he goes to Dallas, you know, Jerry Jones is going to jerk off all over him and allow him to do whatever he wants to do. You know, and then if he comes to Chicago, well, Matt Nagy wants to throw the football. He just unfortunately isn't smart enough to design the proper offense or get the quarterback that he needs to do it. So.
Yeah, well, and, you know, you brought up the fact that with the Patrick Mahomes stuff and where he was drafted, over, you know, under Mitchell Trubisky, how big of a factor is Travis Kelce to his game?
Right.
And, you know would that make a huge difference? Because we don't use – Chicago is notorious for building up a tight end and then sending him off.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just said the exact same thing, you know, you just made the case for Mitchell Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has Travis Kelce. He has Tyreek Hill. Mitchell Trubisky had Jimmy Graham and Allen Robinson. Who are you taking? You taking Hill and Kelce or Robinson and Graham? And, you know, Allen Robinson is a fantastic receiver. Not as good as Tyreek Hill. So, you know, I mean, and people, you know, and I get it, the average fan doesn't think of that, you know, and especially it's the way the media portrays it. The reason the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl was because of Tom Brady. It had nothing to do with the fact that their defense was dominant and attack Patrick Mahomes like absolutely no other team ever. It was the fact that Tom Brady was their quarterback, and that's all that mattered. But if you look at that game, Tom Brady wasn't the MVP. It should have been somebody on the defense. It probably should have been Devin White, who was the MVP of that game. But Orange City is so offensive-centric in every sport now. You know, you look at basketball, it's all about scoring. You look at baseball, it's all about home runs. So football, it's all about the quarterback. Doesn't matter what anybody else does. So when you win, your quarterback is the greatest thing to ever hit the field. When you lose, he sucks and you got to get rid of him. So that's it. Bottom line. So, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we get too many people who are dumb enough to buy into it and they don't look at the entire picture, you know, of what it actually takes to win in the NFL. I mean, you know, you look at some of these quarterbacks who have taken teams and won Super Bowls. They're not guys who are going to go in the Hall of Fame. We're never going to see Jim McMahon go into the Hall of Fame. No. But he won a Super Bowl with the Bears. Why did they win, Dan?
Because of William Perry.
Right. Well, you know, because that defense was probably the best defense we will ever see. You know, Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl with the Ravens because they were on a defense that was right up there with the Bears, that 85 Bears defense. You know, I mean, if you just look and you go down some of those names that have taken teams and won Super Bowls with, it takes that entire team. You can have the best quarterback in the NFL, but if that's all you have, he's not winning a Super Bowl. But a lot of fans don't understand that, and they buy into the media hype of quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. And if you look at these mock drafts, Dan, like I've been doing the last couple days, they've got teams trading up, so the first four picks in the draft are all quarterbacks. Now, none of these teams are even going to make the playoffs if they draft these quarterbacks. Obviously, Jacksonville needs one. They're in a rebuild. They're going to take Trevor Lawrence. That's the best pick for them. You know, the Jets pick number two, and everybody wants them to dump Sam Darnold and start all over with a new guy, when it would make greater sense for them to draft him an offensive weapon, because they hit big on an offensive lineman last year. So you get him a wide receiver, and you try to certify his line later, and all of a sudden they're an improved team and Darnold's a better quarterback. Wow, does that seem difficult, Dan, to build a team?
No.
You know, maybe it's just, but that's the way you do it, right?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, like you said, if it just took a great quarterback to win it all, shouldn't Dan Marino have a Super Bowl or two?
Oh, he should have them all. He was the best quarterback in the league for how many years? You know, I mean, that's just the way it looks, you know, and I mean, obviously great quarterbacks that haven't won because they haven't had the team around them. You know, Archie Manning was a fantastic quarterback before Peyton and Eli came to be. The problem, of course, was he played for the New Orleans Saints when they were bad. So, you know, Jim Plunkett was supposed to be the Golden Boy. Won the Heisman Trophy at Stanford. The Patriots drafted him. I believe he was so bad they cut him. He ended up winning a Super Bowl with the Raiders because he had a better team around him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys can't walk in and do it. And, you know, they're talking about guys that weren't even great college quarterbacks. You know, Trevor Lawrence was very good. You know, so, you know, no big deal. But we're talking about guys like Justin Fields, Zach White, and, a guy from North Dakota State, which is a Division III school. that are going to go really early in the draft and are allegedly all supposed to be franchise quarterbacks. I believe his name is Trey Lance, so at least he has a cool name. Dan, I know you don't remember this, but Carson Wentz also went to North Dakota State and was the second pick in the draft by the Eagles after the Rams took Jared Goff, who oddly enough were both traded this offseason.
And Goff
Goff went to a Super Bowl and lost. At least Wentz has a Super Bowl ring, even though Nick Foles was the quarterback.
Yeah. Well, and isn't it kind of the history with some of the better quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Rodgers, go ahead and name a few more, but weren't these guys not first-round draft picks? Wasn't Tom Brady late?
Aaron Rodgers was considered to possibly be the number one pick in the draft, and the 49ers passed on him and took Alex Smith, and then he fell all the way to 28th. So he almost fell completely out of the first round. Tom Brady, of course, is the legendary one. He was a sixth-round draft pick. He wasn't even a starter in college. He split time at the quarterback position at the University of Michigan. So, just one of those goofy things that, kind of happened and it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point is, too, it doesn't really super concern about the draft position, though. But in the past, it was almost like a quarterback, when he was drafted, did some tutelage and spent at least a year, just suiting up and only, practicing and whatnot. Where today they just assume that this college kid is going to forget everything he learned in college, the amateur ball, and completely turn it around in 1 year. Is that something that's happened, aside from Patrick Mahomes? I guess it was a couple of years, but.
Yeah, for whatever reason, a few years back, everybody decided that you had to get your franchise quarterback in the first round. Now, of course, these idiots forgot. We mentioned Tom Brady. We talked about Russell Wilson earlier, third-round draft pick. Drew Brees, who is the all-time leader, I believe, in passing yards or TDs, one of the two, maybe both, was a second-round draft pick. Those guys had pretty successful careers. Kurt Warner was actually undrafted and played in the Arena League.
Yes.
Ended up having a Hall of Fame career, Dan. Brett Favre was a second-round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can go through and, you can look at some of these guys. You can even go back to Joe Montana, who actually went in the third round, considered one of the best quarterbacks of all time, was a third-round draft pick. So for some reason, somewhere down the line, they convinced people that you needed to take that quarterback in the first round, and all these teams bought into it. So, they jump up and they move up and they give away their future, not realizing that, again, you can't put pieces around this franchise quarterback when you've traded them all away. There you go.
Isn't it kind of the trend, though, over the sports? I mean, I can't really say about hockey so much because I think hockey's would be sort of the unicorn of this before, because for whatever reason you bring in a 19-year-old and somehow he just can kick ass and dominate in the NHL right away. Depending on your speed, if you're that young, you better be quick, right? Because the other guys are going to knock you on your ass. But if you remember, Starlin Castro was—I don't remember if he was the youngest player in the league at the time to come up, or if it was just with the Cubs. But that whole idea of having this young kid at 19 years old come up and just join the major league team. It's like this, it's a trend that seems to be with, you know, NBA, MLB, and the NFL, where, yeah, sometimes it does work out, but I don't feel like the odds are in that great of a favor of that working out. I mean, you know, we had a young Javi Baez who struggled for years, you know, before he kind of got everything to click. And I think it would have been better for him to stay down and learn, you know, as opposed to just having accumulated all that time in the major leagues and putting up such bad numbers for a little while. And, you know, it does seem to take a couple of guys. I mean, you know, we come into a season, you know, starting next month where I can't be off the top of my head right now, but there's going to be some young kids we're going to be looking at like we have over the last couple of years, you know, the last 4 years and just in general. And we've seen these young kids that are talked about and boasted and hyped up. And then, a month into the season, or, you know, before the All-Star break, maybe June, they're all being sent back down and then, you know, let go from their teams. So, you know, I guess I don't understand that growing trend of really trying to just fill it up with young guys.
Well, you know, I think some of it has to do with money, because obviously young guys are cheaper. You know, I mean, the older guys obviously are going to want a little money. But, yeah, you know, I mean, you make a good point. I know, I keep hearing people tell me, and I keep reading that Zion Williamson is a superstar. I don't know if I'm sold on him being there yet. You know, I mean, I think one day he'll get there. Like, I don't think he'll be a bust a la, I don't know, no. Eddie Curry or Tyson Chandler. You know, I do think Williamson will reach superstar level as long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like they bring these guys in, and, like, obviously you were talking about baseball. You mentioned Byron Buxton. He was the number one prospect for multiple years in a row. The Twins finally bring him up, and in all honesty, he's been a bust. So you got to wonder, did they rush him? Was he ready?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, was it Lewis Brimson, or I'm screwing up his name,
right.
It. But, you know, there's a couple guys between, you know, Seattle, Milwaukee, Florida, one of the Florida teams, where they had these young guys that we heard about all, you know, winter. And then, you know, they don't perform at that major league level. And then within roughly 2 years, they're pretty much out of the team that drafted them. And then they kind of, you know, are almost an afterthought and bounced around. I mean, one of those guys that, you know, fortunately was able to kind of keep a job was Jorge Soler. I really can't look back with the Cubs and say, was he brought up too early? You know, he wasn't one of the field guys, really. You know, too many outfielders for Chicago. But he just wasn't really given an opportunity. And I guess that's where I'm getting at, too, is, you know, these guys don't buzz they want so quickly. So then they give up on them just as quickly as they were hyping them. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like a guy, you know, Jorge Soler, or, you know, any of these guys, whether they come from, you know, small town, you know, Illinois, or, you know, a small village in Venezuela, you know, something, you thrust them into this big spotlight, and then you throw all this pressure on them, and it just seems like the performance level isn't there. I Steven Strasburg, think about how his career changed. Obviously, the Tommy John didn't help, but how much did his career change when Bryce Harper was the guy that they were all running to in the locker room?
Yeah. Well, you know, and you wonder, because, you know, Dan, for the last couple years, Wander Franco, the shortstop in the Tampa Bay Rays system, has been the number one rated prospect. All right. This kid is just now 19 years old. Is it really fair to throw this on him and just be like, oh, here, you know, here you go. You're it. You know, and now it's been basically stated that he won't be playing shortstop at the major league level. That's what he's doing in the minors. But again, he's 19. Could you have handled that at 19?
No. No. I mean, so, of course, yeah. When you're 19, you can. You think you can, right? You think you know it all.
Well, you know, and you just – and I, you know, I think, you know, because there's been some calls the last couple of years to bring him up, and I think luckily the fact that he's with Tampa Bay has really helped him because they don't do that. You know, they're smart enough to realize what they have, but there are teams, you know, that do rush these guys, and unfortunately we see them wash out. I believe Byron Buxton is still with the Twins. Maybe he can stay healthy and actually become something, you know, but he hasn't so far, like you mentioned Lewis Brinson, he got another chance with the Marlins and it still didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, the way things go, you know, and especially in baseball, it's so hard to say, you know, oh, well, this guy is, you know, this guy is it, you know, he's going to be it. And, you know, luckily Starlin Castro has had a nice solid career, you know, even though he got it started so early.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he fortunately, I think he was one of the lucky ones who performed at a higher level. I mean, he was, what did he have, like, the most hits the year? He was, like, the one of the youngest. And I don't mean to, you know, kind of point him out and pick on him and say, you know, he didn't work out. But it was more the fact that I just kind of recognized when Starlin Castro was the youngest, it just seemed like we started, you know, that wasn't a big thing. You know, it was just like, oh, this is kind of a cool thing. You know, we got a kid who is able to perform at the major league level and consistently perform, you know, not just once a week or, you know, a 7-day streak out of, you know, 30 games or something like that. He was consistently performing. But then it was like after that, you just started to see team after team with, oh, no, now we've got the youngest guy, you know. The next thing we're going to try to do is get us, you know, a 16-year-old who graduated high school, you know, like Bryce Harper did, and, you know, played had three at-bats at community college, so now he's ready, right? You know, and that's where I guess I was kind of getting with that. It was, you know, to my knowledge, you know, Starlin Castro was one that stuck out so much. You know, and this was almost 10 years ago now, and it just seemed like after that, every team was looking to get their youngest prospect up. You know, how long did it take Juan Soto to finally, you know, get a solid position in the outfield in Washington? And then, you know, it still took him some time to acclimate. Where had they just had him in the minors instead of, you know, well, you know, you're the fourth outfielder some days. And, you know, he could have had that time in building up that experience. And, you know, that kind of plays in with the changes for minor league baseball. And I hope these are things that will make it game better, is that they'll be able to, like, really assess and, you know, who should be down and who should be at this level, especially when you're not having to send a guy all over, you know, to, between seven different farm systems.
Well, you know, the Juan Soto name is kind of interesting, Dan, because, you know, he debuted at 19, and, you know, luckily it's worked out for the Nationals, but just the year before that, Victor Robles made his debut for the Nationals at 20. You know, him and Soto were supposed to be their outfield combo for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work out for Robles like it did for Soto. Now, he's still with the Nationals, and, you know, hopefully he'll get a chance to start this year, but it hasn't gone as well. So, you know, they're, you know, hits and misses, you know, all the way through these kind of things when you see these guys come up, and they have it here, Dan. It looks like Starlin Castro actually came up when he was 20.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the youngest age at the time. You know, you really, in our era, you really didn't have a straight out of high school kid. You know, 20 was kind of that number. And I think he was a young 20, early in his 20.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, and I mean, there, you know, there's some interesting names that debuted really early. You know, and I don't even know if you'll remember some of these guys, Dan, but Lasting's Millage was supposed to be a premier outfielder for the Mets, debuted at 21 in 2006 and washed out. At least I know you'll know this guy. Your guy Cameron Maben, who re-signed with the Cubs on a minor league deal, he debuted at 20 and never really had the career people thought he was going to have. So, you know, it just, for whatever reason, you know, you've got to be careful when you're bringing these guys up. You know, you've got to know they're ready. You just can't rush them. And unfortunately, you know, too many of them got rushed and they never developed.
Yeah, well, and Maben, was it with San Diego that they, you know, he did pretty well and then they gave him that 6-year contract?
Yeah, he had that. I believe he had one really, really good year. Let me see if I can find it here. He had a couple solid years in San Diego before he was injured, and then he went on and had one really, really good year for Atlanta. But let's see, contract wise, what do we have for him? Yeah, it was the Padres who kind of bumped up his salary there. Not huge compared by today's standards, but he got a pretty solid deal. And then unfortunately, you know, he had an injury that cost him, and then it just didn't work out. It looked like he had bounced back with Atlanta, but for some reason they only kept him the 1 year. They didn't try to re-sign him. It just kind of odd. And, you know, now we'll see. Believe it or not, he's still only 34. And he's going to get a shot to try to make the Cubs this year in spring training. You know, but at least he's managed to put together a career for himself. You know, I mean, like Lasting's Millage, like I mentioned, didn't last very long. I'm going to double check his player card. He spent a couple years with the Mets before he, you know, bounced over to Washington. But he debuted in 2006. He was out of the game by 2011. So he went from big-time prospect to out of the game in 6 years.
So he didn't really last long or put on a bunch of mileage in the MLB, huh? Ooh, that's so bad.
And unfortunately, because, you know, obviously, somewhere down the line, somebody had him rated a fantastic player. Oddly enough, his last major league games came with the White Sox in 2011. He bounced around quite a bit. He played in Venezuela. He spent, it looks like 4 years in the Japanese league. No, 6 years in the Japanese league. Before he played some winter ball in Mexico, and his last year was with Lancaster in the Atlantic League in 2017. So, you know, I mean, he played baseball for a long time, just never made the, you know, the leap after being a highly rated prospect and, you know, one of those guys. And unfortunately, that happens, I think, more than it doesn't. So, but, you know, we'll have to see. But, you know, before we run out of time, Dan, I wanted to congratulate Chicago Bulls on the fact that they're apparently going to win the NBA title this year. If you listen to the radio overnight like I did last night, Dan, apparently beating the worst team in the NBA in overtime and getting to one game under 500 makes you a threat to win the NBA title. So I wanted to congratulate the Bulls on that. And for whatever reason, Sean is apparently on the bandwagon. So I'll have to get him to explain himself tomorrow, because I still think they're a joke and they're not even going to win a playoff game. But I guess that's just me.
I mean, they're not winning the finals.
They're winning it all. What are you talking about? Gee. So, and then humorously, Dan, you know, we talked about my bet last night. I don't know if you saw the game. I just kind of heard the BS overnight. Minnesota hit 3 free throws to tie it in the closing seconds. If they would have missed just one of those free throws, I would have won, because Minnesota was a 4.5-point underdog. Hell, they could have missed 2 of those free throws. There were all 3 of them, and they still would have won. But by going to overtime, the Bulls won by 7, so they covered. So that's how great of luck I would have as a gambler. Now you know why I don't do it. So what, you're not buying the Bulls as a NBA title contender after their big win last night?
In the words of Jed Hoyer, if you make the playoffs, you're a championship contending team, Big Jack.
Yeah. But I think you and I and 3 other guys could make the playoffs in the East. So, you know, as of right now, there are 4 teams that are going to make the Eastern Conference playoffs that aren't even over 500. That's fantastic. In the NFL, they would call that parity. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be fantastic if the Bulls roll in as a 5 seed and get destroyed by whoever the 4 seed is. Or maybe they'll get lucky and win the series and then get wiped out by a Brooklyn or a Philadelphia. You know, that apparently what I didn't realize is Zach LaVine is going to go down as one of the greatest players in NBA history. You learn a lot listening to overnight radio, Dan, especially in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think any other place is like this, but man, when a team wins a couple games because the Bulls have won 3 in a row, we jump all over it. And I get, you know, with the Bears and, you know, the Cubs situation that things are a little down, but don't forget the Blackhawks are playing well, you know, and hopefully at some point in time they'll get Jonathan Toews back, and that may help them even more. So, you know, let's maybe Chicago pay a little bit of attention to hockey, where they may have a little legitimate chance to win a playoff and actually do something. You know, let's just not jump on the Bulls bandwagon, but apparently everybody's on. Are you on?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they're going to be a championship contending team when they make the 8th seed.
Thank God. I'm so glad you were on this thing. I was afraid Stu was by himself and he wasn't going to have any friends. So I was just so frightened. We got to go because I'm just bitter and angry. The link to the Facebook page. Don't forget to put a beat with you. Hey, if that's going on radio, how clever will you do that? Do not all on Twitter if you want to hit this up, so turn that down and have some fun with us. If you still have time to listen to us live, don't forget to listen to me this, because I'm putting myself on this podcast. Dan just kind of came along for the ride, but get out of here and decide what you want to do with that. Take care.